The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton is with you for the next 30 minutes to have an honest, open, frank conversation about gambling addiction and addicts like myself. And happy to have joining us today a gambler in recovery, Gloria, joining us today. Gloria, good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. Good morning to everyone as well.
Nice of you to join us and share your story. How long has it been since your last wager?
February of 2023. February 21st of 2023.
All right, so just over a year. Congratulations on that.
Just
very
barely,
proud of you.
Yes.
You must feel very, very good about where you're at now, huh?
I am. I'm in celebration mode for the year.
I like it.
I like it.
How old were you?
I feel
you?
A load has been lifted. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great way to put it. A load being lifted off your shoulders in many, many ways, I know. How old were you when you first got exposed to gambling?
Oh, my goodness. I guess probably when gambling came to Virginia, and I don't even know how long that was, but I was no spring chicken. I'll let everybody know I will be 70 in September.
God bless.
So you would never think that somebody at that age would, get caught up in it, but I did.
So you got caught up in it in your...
A friend taking me to the casinos, and then it just kind of got out of whack. I just went, hog wild, as they say.
So it's interesting. So you weren't a problem gambler in your teens or 20s or 30s or 40s or even 50s. It really started in your 60s, huh?
Yeah, in my 60s. And I think I had the benefit of having a counselor that was referred to me by my GA contact. And we kind of delved into it, and a lot of things happened. First, we kind of probably determined that I had a predisposition to some type of addictive behavior because of alcoholism in my family. I mean, I was like, oh, no, don't take a drink. I don't do that, But somewhere, I guess, there was that little gene or something in there that got me, was there waiting to be triggered. And then it really took off in 2011 when my husband passed away.
Got it.
And kind of lonesome and didn't have anything to do, so I just, like I said, started going to the casinos. Then I started doing, the scratch-offs. And then I got into the online that you can actually do on your phone or computer at home.
So it's interesting. Most problem gamblers, myself included, we're not looking to gamble to be sociable. We're looking to gamble to get away from people and to get away from things. And we don't want attention. We don't want to gamble with five or six other people watching us or hanging out with us. You gambled as a mechanism to cope with the loss of a husband. So I assume as you started to gamble, you were the same way. It was a bit of an escape for you? Or did you do it with friends? And was it a sociable thing for you?
It started, like I say, a friend asking me to go to the casino with them frequently. And I would do that. And after that, I just seemed to kind of like any type of gambling. Sorry for that distraction there.
That's okay.
But I don't know that it was so much I wanted to be social with people. It was more the fact that I just wanted to kind of have something to do. As they say, I was retired. I didn't have a per se job or anything. So I was kind of looking for something to do. I did find it a social activity in that when I would go to my local convenience stores and buy either tickets or play my numbers, as they say, or even get into those convenience store machines that they have thankfully taken out of the stores here in Virginia. I would get to know the people on a first name basis. They'd say, oh, hey, such and such a number came out, or, that machine over there, that one's paying and this one's not. And so I kind of had somebody to kind of talk to because I'd been a loner most of my life. I didn't have a wide social circle.
It was
so
you
it was
and your
primarily
husband,
my
much,
husband
yeah.
And my daughter, who is now, is married and got a family. So I guess I was looking for some type of social interaction.
Sure. So when you look back on it with clarity, it's one thing, you know, to start gambling with a friend and then even using gambling to kind of avoid, you know, their emotional feelings or kind of escape from life, as it were. When you look back on it, was there a key game or a moment when you recognized it went from, okay, I can handle this, I can afford it, to becoming a problem?
Yes, when we started to, I will say, when they repossessed my car, that one was a key notice that there was a problem. When you started getting turnoff notices for your utilities because you couldn't pay your bills. And finally, when I realized that I was going to take out a more or less a payday loan type of thing, although it was on installments, when I was taking out a payday loan on top of a payday loan.
Wow.
So that I could pay my car insurance. It's like, okay.
And were people in your life, I know you said you didn't have a ton of friends, but was there anybody in your life that was like, hey, Gloria, what's going on? You don't seem to be yourself. Or, hey, you're spending a lot of time in a casino or gambling, you know, at home. Or was there nobody in your life that recognized that you were starting to act differently?
My son-in-law. Thank God for him. He mm-hmm. he kind of he realized it even before my car was repossessed. And the funny thing about it is he had access to my email, and that was fine. I told him I don't have any secrets, but I didn't realize all of my little notices from the Virginia Lottery and all these things of, you know, that this new game, this winning was deposited or something like that. All those things, and then he would say he'd see all the little shavings from the actual scratch tickets in the car where he would borrow my car.
So he was on to you pretty quickly.
He was on to me pretty quickly, yes. And as they said, he convinced me that I needed to sit down with my family, being my mother, who was 91 years old, and right. My daughter, and he, to sit down and say, okay, we have to handle this. We have to do it. And he said, you know, start by writing out your debts, you know, figure out, you know, you have plenty of money coming in terms of you've got, you know, your retirement, your social services, social security, and you've got your husband's civil service. You've got money coming in. And at the time, I had several rental properties that my husband had left me. And So I was no reason not to be able to pay my bills.
You had steady income, but you were at a point where you were starting to out-gamble the income that you had coming in.
The income, and I ended up selling several properties rather than lose them because I had tenants in them, but I actually sold properties. So that's what I mean. That's really where it hit home.
So before
when
we take,
I had to sell my rental property so that I could have money. But then, instead of being thrifty enough to put that aside and save it for that rainy day that my husband always told me, I went ahead. Oh, I can gamble. I can take out, you know, this much money, and I know I'll make it back. And you and I both know what that is. You know, chasing our losses.
That's fool's gold right there. No doubt about that.
Yes, it is. It was terrible. And then I got to where I was like, you know, not talking to my family so much. They were like, oh, I didn't get a text from you today, you know, to tell me, you know, how you doing or something or give me a blessing or something like that. They kind of knew because by then I started withdrawing from them and going more towards, hey, let me go down to the corner. And I would always say the corner store called my name. Because there were people in there, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. You know, let's do this, let's do that. And, you know, they realized that something was going on, and they said, okay, we need to sit down, and we need to handle it. We need to deal with
it. So before your son-in-law, you know, sat down with you and started going over it, and you started this journey of getting well, for a lot of gamblers, there's that you're really bleak bottom of the barrel moment, like the last time you gambled, or you know, the reality that you had no money in the bank and you know now you're contemplating really bad things and you know that you don't see a way out. But before we take the break, was there a moment like that for you, or was it kind of collective, we're going in this direction. Eventually, I was going to hit rock bottom, and you know, my son-in-law just kind of had discovered it and walked me through it. What was your story?
I was there because 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. So I was going through chemo at the same time that I was, you know, trying to gamble away all my cares and worries.
Wow.
And I, you know, was very sick, you know, as a result of that. And at night, I didn't sleep. I would wake up and I would have those terrible thoughts. I would be like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I've, you know, done everything. I've taken everything to the pawn shop. I've lost my husband's wedding band. I've lost everything. I mean, and when I guess the kicker was when they towed my car, like I say, when they repossessed my car and I had to ask my mother to help me get my car back. I said, and that really was rock bottom. But I don't think he kind of knew something was wrong, but he didn't know how bad, you know, it was.
Right.
I just told him I had some excess repairs around the house. You know how you make excuses.
You lie about everything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just one lie after another. And that's kind of when it started going, you know, into a kind of a deep, deep depression. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to do anything. And I definitely didn't sleep at night. I mean, I just, you know, would just try to think of ways to try to, you know, get the money back. What can I do? What can I play?
Yeah, I'm listening to your story and I'm moved by it, you know, because, you know, outside of, you know, having cancer, obviously I lived the emotional wreckage that you live. So I'm very sensitive to that. And it's hard for people to understand, you know, the tricks our minds playing us as we try to contemplate, you know, gambling out of a problem, gambling because it makes us feel good, all the while knowing that we got to stop gambling. And for whatever the reason might be, we convince ourselves, oh, just one more time, or today will be the last day I do it, or, you know, I'll figure this all out tomorrow type of thing. Let's take a quick break.
Yeah, that was my thing.
Talking to Gloria a few more moments here on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have Gloria joining us telling her story. I should ask Gloria, how are you in your cancer recovery?
Just had an appointment this morning with my oncologist, and as they said, because of the type of cancer I had, it's, you know, typically going to recur, but at right now we have it at bay, so I am, you know, feeling very good. I do a kind of a light chemo treatment,
yep,
like every 14 days, but it doesn't have the wretched side effects previously, so
sure.
I feel good, and the fact that I tell everybody the story that I can actually put gas in my car, okay,
nice,
instead of sitting here thinking I don't have enough gas to go.
So walk me through that. So you've been in recovery for just over a year now, which is awesome, and really proud of you for that. Walk me through the first couple days or first couple weeks of recovery as best as you can remember them from a year ago, February, when you first decided, okay, I've got a problem. I know I got a problem. You know, I've sold everything I got. I got nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to be homeless and
right,
I'm sick. What was the first day or two of recovery like for you?
A lot of crying. It's like, I don't believe you did this. I'm like looking back and thinking back to those times when, hey, you just won $13,000 online and you spent it that same day. You know what I'm saying? You
yep,
kept putting it back in thinking, I'm going to get it. I'm going to make it more. I kind of, each day in my mind, it was that thought that, okay, you did this, but you can go back and get it. You can go back and get it. So there was a lot of crying and just trying to say, no, can't do it. And I would tell people that I would actually take the long way around convenience stores that I said would call my name. I didn't want to be tempted because I knew that I didn't have enough wherewithal to not go in,
right,
because the owners knew me and everything. Oh, we got a new machine. We got new scratchers. You want to try this? Things like that. So I had to make myself, you know, not be tempted.
Sure.
Because I knew I had no, I really had no resource within me. You know, without this GA and without my counselor, I didn't have the resources.
You didn't trust yourself.
I didn't trust myself. That's what it was.
Right.
I mean, I would go to a 7-Eleven and I'd let my grandkids go in. You go in, that's fine. I'll wait for you. Here's the money. because I didn't want to stand at the counter and look at the scratch tickets.
Right,
because
you knew eventually you'd buy one scratch off, and then you'd buy another one, and we know how that where that story goes for you.
Oh, yeah.
What did you? How hard was it for you to fill the time you spent on gambling by trying to create some hobbies, interests, other things in your life to do? Because it sounds like here you are, you know, in your 60s, now in your 70s, and gambling was such a big part of your life at that stage of your life, having lost your husband. Was it hard for you to replace the time that you spent on gambling?
What I did, and I tell everybody, yes, you have to find something to replace it. So at first I started reading. I had always had a love of reading. So I got a lot of books, and I just started, you know, reading. And my counselor had given me some audio tapes that were good, you know, that I could listen to. And a couple of podcasts about gambling that I could look at. But I found that I had more time to spend with my family, being my grandkids, that I could take them to the park. I could, you know, I could do something. And I actually had money in my pocket where I didn't have to say, oh, well, if mom and dad send you over to spend the night, make sure they send money for you to eat dinner. I mean, that's how bad it was. But I found that, okay, if you, you know, plan accordingly, the first couple of times it was a task, and I had to say, okay, no gambling this week. The kids want to come over this, you know, this evening or this weekend, and I had to, you know, think there's better things to do,
right,
and think back to, you know, what was I doing sitting in front of a machine, okay, talking to somebody about mindless things, trying to figure out how to count how many turns until we get another one, you know, or what number to bet on. So I had to make a conscious effort to do something, and I started volunteering at my church as a treasurer, which was helpful. The other thing,
were you concerned at all, Gloria, that signing up to work at your church as a treasurer, that you could trust yourself with the church's money?
And that I was going to say, the listeners will find it very interesting. I worked over 25 years in a bank, in a bank, yes. And I always used to say, all those little pieces, dirty pieces of paper, that's somebody else's money. It never tempted me.
Wow.
And I would counsel people how to budget, show them how to balance their checkbooks, how they could do this and come out on the better end. And that's one thing my mother said to me, how can you do this? And how can you do the treasurer's work? That never occurred to me. The only fear I had was that somebody might learn, you know, somebody in my circle of people that I've came in contact might find out that I had that issue.
Yeah.
But,
so it's funny.
It was so bad, I would actually turn my phone on mute so that when the debt collectors would call me, if I was around somebody, they wouldn't hear it. You know, it would go straight to voicemail or turn it off.
Yeah, so you really, it was much like for me in a different level. You know, all the issues are all self-inflicted, but you maintained a high moral code when it came to how you treated other people.
Yes, and that is just so strange to me. I'm like, I could do for others, but I couldn't do for myself. I could teach you how to get out of a bind, you know, and I could teach you, you know, how to budget, how to make sure you have enough money to do this, to do that.
And yet the whole time you were obviously... Like, you were losing everything and making terrible financial decisions, but if I walked into the bank when you were there, you could advise me on how to make the right decisions, which is obviously crazy, but this is part of the addiction. I wonder for you, to be fair, I was never the most religious person, but I find that my experience, and I'm, you know, 6 years almost now into my recovery, I've become a far more spiritual person. And I wonder for you if your relationship with God and with the church has changed as you've now gone on this journey of recovery.
I became more active in terms of, I was always a member of my church, but I never really got into any of the activities or anything. You know, while I was gambling, it's like, oh, no, you know, I don't want to, you know, run into somebody or somebody know whatever. I mean, on Sunday, everybody else going to church, you know, guess where I'm going? I'm running down to the, you know, to the corner store to play the games. And then you know, making sure I meet that 2 o'clock cutoff and, you know, to put my numbers in the state of Virginia type of things. But having been through where I've been, I say, you know, everybody has to have a higher power, God or whatever. That's the only thing I really think, that and the support that I had from everybody, you know, that has really helped me. And I truly have become a more spiritual person. I mean, I participate in more of our activities, and I, you know, tell people, I said, you know, by the grace of God, I could have been out there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't go into the details, but I tell them, you know, I said, hey, you know, you've got to give it to him sometime and say, take the wheel and help me get through whatever the problem is.
Before I let you go, what advice would you give people, regardless of age, based on your experience? There's a lot of people that listen to the show that are literally back where you were just over a year ago. You know, at day one of recovery, they know they have a problem. They know they want to get help. They don't want to keep living, you know, the lifestyle they're living, but, you know, they're scared, they're worried, the walls are caving in, they're not quite sure that they can ever fix all the wrongs that they've created. If you were going to sit and advise somebody, you know, who's where you were more than a year ago at step one, what's the most basic advice you would give them?
You've got to admit you've got a problem and reach out for help, wherever it be. You've got to say, okay, I can't do this by myself, either at VGA, be a counselor, be family, whomever. But if that first step is just realizing, I did it to myself. And, yep. But don't beat yourself up. You know, things happen. Everybody has problems. But realizing that you've got a problem and you've got to get some help to get through it.
And how much better is life today than it was just over a year ago?
Oh, my gosh. It's wonderful. It is wonderful. I tell them I no longer have to go through the drive-thru at McDonald's and see if I can find 4 quarters in my little coin thing in console to buy a cookie. Okay, that's how bad it was. I mean, I would say, can I, you know, how much is one cookie? Let me see if I can find a dollar so I can buy a cookie. It's millions of times better. I mean, I wake up and I feel like, okay, I can do this, instead of waking up and thinking I should have died or I should have stayed asleep. That was where I was. I was at that point where I just wished it would go away, and then I never had to deal with it again. And by whatever means it was, whether I shut my eyes and never opened them again or whatever, I was at that point. But there is hope. It might be a pinpoint of light, but there is hope.
Yeah, it's so well said. I appreciate your time. I can listen to you and talk to you all day. Obviously, we can't do that today, but just know that I'm really proud of you. And as someone who's been on a similar journey of recovery, you know, keep it up, Gloria. You're doing a great job, and your story needs to be told, and I'm glad you're willing to share it. Love those grandkids of yours up. And,
yes,
you know, just, you just keep getting through every single day with this mindset, and I think you'll be fine. And, you know, Godspeed in regards to your cancer recovery as well. Hope the very, very best for you, and really appreciate you taking some time to share your story with us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And you deserve that medal. 6 years. Oh, yeah. When I grow up, I hope I'm like you. Okay?
You're going to beat me. You're going to beat me for sure. But thanks. Okay. I hope to get to meet you in person one day soon. Thank you so much.
Okay, that'd be great. All right. You have a great day.
Take care. That's Gloria down in Virginia. Awesome. You know, it's not every day, you know, when you talk to gamblers that their gambling started so late in life. But there's usually a cause or reason for that. And in her case, as she said, unfortunately, you know, she lost her husband, and now she's also dealing with the cancer diagnosis. You know, more and more people have to keep sharing their stories, and we will continue to do this show to give them the platform to share their stories. And obviously can't thank the fan enough and you guys that listen to this show enough for allowing me to continue to do it. As I said when we started the show, you know, more than 4 years ago now, this is the most important content I've ever broadcast in a more than 30-year career now, and I'm proud of it, and I hope that it helps make a difference either in your life or someone close to you, and I will continue to do it as long as they allow me to. Joe Beningo's coming up next. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We all made it to May, and the summer's right around the corner, so keep listening to The Fan, and thank you for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.